Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much. Where's Dermot? There
it's
he is.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. I remember last year at some stage, a lady in Italy wrote us a letter, as in the people in the rest of Europe. And she was telling us what things were going to look like because they'd been through the horrors when it came to the pandemic. And we can now do the opposite because it's good news. We can look across at our neighbours across the Irish Sea and see what they're doing. And know that that's in our future as well. It's all bright and happy. So I spotted this in The Guardian today. Pilot event will test music fans at normal gig. So this is happening in Liverpool, right, on May the 2nd, which is only 2 weeks away. And they're going to have 5,000 people at a gig in 2 weeks' time in Liverpool. Music fans will be jumping up and down, thinking that they may have something before the end of the summer in this country. So this is a gig, but it's also a huge scientific experiment. So only residents of the Liverpool City region can apply for 5,000 tickets. They must have tested negative the previous day, and their tickets are automatically activated once they have received the result at a designated testing centre. So if you're pregnant or you're classed as extremely clinically vulnerable, you can't apply. And concert goers must be registered with a local GP. So it's part of a UK government event research programme, which is running a series of pilots to test safety at mass gatherings. So it's going to be in a venue that has a capacity of 7,500, but it's only 5,000 people are going. And they're going to have people monitoring the whole thing, movement around the gig, at the gig, and then they're going to be monitoring people afterwards. So it's, as I say, it's a huge scientific experiment around a music gig. Blossoms are the band who are playing, and it's happening on May 2nd in Sefton Park. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. People are definitely out and about. You know, the weather's nice. It was particularly good on Saturday. We were out on Sandymount Beach first thing Saturday morning, and it was jammers. Well, it wasn't jammers because the tide was out, so you could have fit, you know, hundreds of thousands of people on the beach. But there were a lot of people there, a lot of dogs, everyone smiling, everyone enjoying the early morning sun. Then we went home, did various things. And then it came to the end of the day and I had the dinner made, pot of curry. And I was thinking, what do I do now? It's about 5:30, 5:15. I said, Asher, I'll hop on the bike and go to Dunleary because they have these new cycle tracks now from Blackrock to Dunleary in South County Dublin. So I said I'd go out and just see what it was like. Onto the bike, off I went. The first thing I noticed was the amount of traffic coming back from Dunleary was a lot. I won't say it was astronomical, but it was a lot. And people looked a little bit agitated. Because I don't know if you know this, but by putting in an extra cycle track, they've curtailed one roadway to one way. And as a result, they're pushing the traffic up onto the top road, which is causing congestion. Anyway, I was thinking to myself as I cycled that those motorists are looking at me as a cyclist and going, if it wasn't for you cyclists, we'd be home by now with the barbecue on. Anyway, cycled on and it was just lovely. The seafront there, Sea Point, and loads of people having picnics. And I spotted three little old ladies. Maybe they weren't old, they were little ladies. There's a viewing point there past Sea Point, and they had a bottle of white wine, and they were looking out to Howth Head and having the chats. They were well wrapped up. And then there were loads of people having picnics along the way. The thing that I did notice, and this is why I'm telling you this little story, is that a lot of people were wearing those dry robes. You know, these things that they're like a coat come towel thing that you put on after you come out from sea swimming. And they come in all sorts of colours and all sorts of... anyway, the ones that I noticed, which is sort of ironic, and I counted about 10 of them in my little trip out to Dunleary and back, were the camouflage version. So there's a camouflage version of this dry robe, and they were just sticking out like sore thumbs, which is obviously the opposite of what camouflage is supposed to be. And I'm sure there were people in black ones and navy ones and all that. I didn't notice them because they could be coats or anything else. But I did spot loads of camouflage dry robes and a lot of people smiling, a lot of people joined the outdoors. And as we know now, which is brilliant, that less than 0.1% of the cases in the last 13 months were from outside meetings. So we can get out there, and they're encouraging us to get out there and enjoy the weather, enjoy the outdoors. And that brings us on to the next thing. You know, this mad thing that they proposed in Dublin City Council for a whitewater rapid thing, man-made, in Dublin, and people poo-pooed it and said, what ridiculous waste of money. But what has happened is that people are now talking about an outdoor swimming pool in Dublin. Now, that makes more sense. I know there's an outdoor swimming pool over in Clontarf. It's supposed to be public, or is it public? Somebody might tell me about that. But they're proposing now that maybe they might build some sort of an outdoor swimming pool in or around Ringsend or Irishtown, around there. And there's loads of, because we've spotted a few of them on our travels over the last few years. There are a good few outdoor swimming pools around the country. Most notably, we broadcast from beside the one in Drumshambo, which is heated, which is a lovely idea. So it's an outdoor swimming pool, heated. And then I think in Banagher, there's one where they've just walled off a bit of the Shannon and you can swim there. And I know there's the one down on the River Lee opposite a hotel we stayed in once. And Bagnell Sound have an outdoor heated swimming pool in County Carlow. And there's one in the West End pool in County Donegal. I'm just looking at a list here of the 10, the top 10 outdoor swimming pools in the country. Portumna. That's a walled off area of Loch Derg, according to my information here. Belmullet Tidal Pool in County Mayo, that's obviously a seawater pool. Ballinakil Outdoor Swimming Pool in County Leash, they're all there. And people are, this is one of the good things I think that's going to come out of the lockdown, is that we're beginning to, well, not that we're beginning to, but we have investigated what's out there for us in the outdoors, in our locality, in our 5K radius or our 20K radius. And I think when lockdown is over, people will appreciate the outdoors a lot more. They'll be going to their local parks for walks. And if you had a local outdoor swimming pool, you would probably use it. And I know we don't have the weather for it, but now that people are sea swimming and they have the dry robes, black, navy or camouflaged, they're probably more likely to swim in an outdoor pool. So that's that. I remember back in the day when I was saying Google, I'd have to say Yahoo as well, because they were sort of competing against each other. And I always felt that it would be unfair to say one and not say the other. And of course, now we know that Google is the leader in that sort of thing. But there was a time when Yahoo was the leader, and particularly Yahoo Answers. And this was a site back in the day, it sounds really quaint now, that you typed in a question and then people would try to answer it for you. You know, very quaint. It was only second to Wikipedia at a time back in probably the early noughties. 120 million users worldwide. And I was thinking to myself, how does that compare now to Google these days? Well, listen to this. And these aren't official stats, because Google don't give out their metrics. But according to, you know, pretty well-informed calculations, 70,000 searches on Google per second. That's 227 million per hour, and 5.4 billion searches on Google a day. It's mad, isn't it? Crazy numbers, crazy numbers. Anyway, the reason I'm talking about Yahoo Answers is that they're calling it a day on Yahoo Answers. So people used to type in questions like, do you think humans will ever walk on the sun? And then somebody would answer them back. If you die in Canada, do you die in real life? That's obviously a slag on Canada. Then people were looking for the birds and the bees types answers. How is a baby formed? And they were all answered there on Yahoo Answers. How do I turn off caps locks on my computer? Can baby see ghosts? That's an interesting one. Let's go back to that one. They've just retyped these or republished these just because it's the end of an era. My son is 6 weeks old and he will always stare at something, or I should say nothing really. He will smile and coo at it, and you can see him follow it with his eyes. Is this possibly a ghost? And if so, can it hurt him? And then somebody answers, no, your baby is not seeing ghosts. At 6 weeks, a baby can't see too much, and they certainly don't understand that you are supposed to talk to people rather than objects. Chances are that he's cooing at the bar in his crib or anything else that is contrasting in his vision, and not a ghost. That's the type of answers. That's great. They might have asked the question like this: how often should you change your toothbrush? And that's answered on rte.ie. 3 months is the answer there for that. Just other things that caught our attention on this Monday. Skinny jeans are out, according to Forbes magazine. They made a hames of talking about Limerick recently. I see they're coming to Limerick to do some sort of big event by way of an apology. Anyway, Forbes say that skinny jeans are out. Bootcut jeans are in. Patchwork on your jeans are in as well. My mother was brilliant at patching up jeans. Just brilliant. You take the pocket, a pocket off the back, and then you put it on the knee. And I remember heading off to the disco with your newly patched up jeans, thinking you were the bee's knees. Well, the patched knees, anyway. 90s baggy fit, they're in. Tapered leg, if you're, you know, if you like the skinny jeans, you can still wear a tapered leg. This is all according to Forbes. And another esteemed publication, The Economist. Somebody spotted this today, that Zoom fatigue is worse for women than for men. Seemingly, as a result of research by University of Gothenburg, they surveyed 10,500 people about their experience with video conferencing during the pandemic. And they found that women spend more time on Zoom, and they reckon that because women pay more attention to their appearance, that it was probably a little bit more stressful looking at themselves on Zoom. Isn't it amazing for Zoom that they now are like Hoover is the vacuum cleaners? So you don't say, you know, a vacuum, you say a Hoover. And now you don't say, you know, Teams or Skype or Facebook Live. You say Zoom. Well, Ray, I went to Dunmore East at the weekend and had the nicest fish and chips from the East Pier overlooking Hook Head. Oh, you lucky thing, you. Anything unusual in curry recipe, please? Mine are boring, says Anne. Yeah, I've sort of arrived at one that works, but you have to keep it plain enough with the children having it. You can't have it too spicy. The main thing about a curry, and I've discovered this over the years, is how you do your onions at the start. Make sure they're chopped up nice and small, and let them sweat off. Make sure they don't burn. Give them loads of time, because that's what forms that lovely depth of flavour and gives it a sweetness. Charleston County Mayo has heated outdoor pool as well. Ballina, Killaloo, heated pool. I think we mentioned that. 51551ray@rte.ie. Better tell you about our quiz of today. Today, the 19th of April, and we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. Big news stories, scientific breakthroughs, movies, TV programs, births and deaths, and everything else is in there. We're looking for two people to answer 5 questions each. And our prize today comes from The Heritage in Laois. It's set in the heart of the countryside in the pretty village of Killinard, just over an hour's drive from Dublin. Enjoy on-site activities like golf, tennis, country walks, or visit the leisure centre or award-winning spa. The prize is a luxurious two-night break at The Heritage. You and a guest will stay for 2 nights with breakfast on each morning and dinner on one evening in Blake's. The perfect treat to look forward to. You can find out more at theheritage.com. So 2 people after 4 o'clock, please, for our quiz of today. And here is our qualifying question. Which Irish county would you find the town of Drogheda? Which Irish county would you find the town of Drogheda? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. Thank you. I was in Toher's shop outside Newbridge yesterday and saw the cake you were talking about. It's called a gur cake. Cheers, Georgina. I was going for a bit of gur over the weekend, but I couldn't find anywhere any gur or Chester cake locally. But we had a great chat about it on Friday. So you can get it in Toher's shop outside Newbridge. Thanks for that, Georgina. 51551ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Tom Adele and Another Love on RTE Radio 1. Thanks, Tom. 51551ray@rte.ie. Jackie's been on. Last Friday, you played songs that might be played once people are vaccinated. Any chance you might put the names of the songs up on your Twitter? We will. I was bopping in my car in anticipation of playing these songs with friends once lockdown was over. Can't remember all of them. Well, we were playing it because Freya Clements wrote an article in the Irish Times about getting her vaccination up in the SSE in Belfast. And while she was getting her vaccination, they were blasting out D-Reams, Things Can Only Get Better. And we were thinking to ourselves, what other songs would be fitting? And we got loads of suggestions and we played a few. Bob Marley, Three Little Birds, you know, Everything's Going to Be All Right. I Feel Free by Cream. Vaccination Once Again would be a variation on A Nation Once Again. Congratulations by Cliff Richard. Ain't Got No Life by Nina Simone, my favourite. I'm Free by the Soup Dragons. Freedom by George Michael. Everybody's Free to Feel Good by Rosala. And Things Can Only Get Better by D-Ream. But like most things, they all sounded brilliant on a Friday afternoon. On a Monday afternoon, maybe, I don't know. Ray, Super Value in Walkinstown, Dublin 12, make and sell their own gur cake. And it's yummy, says Jackie. On cakes, there is a controversy brewing. Well, it's fully brewed, I think, at the moment, between M&S and Aldi about a caterpillar cake. And we're going to have the full details of that with Conor Pope and Niamh Hassell before 4 o'clock. Try putting rhubarb in your curry. Very popular in our house, says Etna. That sounds very controversial, Etna. I've never heard of rhubarb in a curry before. Maybe you might give us the full lowdown on that, the full recipe. A public open-air swimming pool is called a Lido, says Kevin. Thanks, L-I-D-O. What's the origin of that word, Kevin? 51551. Quick commercial break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551. Now, our next guest played for Tyrone when they won the All-Ireland in 03 and 05. In 2012 or thereabouts, he moved to New York City. And 3 weeks ago, he had a life-changing heart attack. And he's on the line now from his home in New York. Mickey Coleman, how are you doing, Mickey?
Doing much better, Ray. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. So, was that the first time Tyrone won in All-Ireland back in 03?
It was, yes. Right. Was the first time.
Under Mickey Hart?
Yeah, under Mickey Hart, that's correct, yeah.
What are your memories of that? That must have been...
a lot of great memories of 03. A lot of hard work went in. Mickey took over the reins in 03 and we worked really, really hard. We really wanted to win in All-Ireland. We'd came off the success of a couple of under 21 All-Irelands, and then Mickey was the manager then, so he wanted to push on, so thankfully he did.
Hello?
Hello,
oh,
yeah.
You're there, sorry. He did, yeah, and you won that and then came back in 05 and won it again. Now, we spotted your interview with Damien Lawler on RTE.ie, so this has been a mad few weeks for you. So I suppose let's go back to March before the heart attack. So what age? 41. Yeah. Married to Aaron, two children, Micheál and Reardon. What was an average day like for you?
Well, I have a construction company. We're based in Manhattan. So typically I would get up at 5:30 a.m. I'd be out the door by 6. Usually be in the office by 6:30. And then just the business as usual, the normal thing about the day, be men on job sites, just looking after, just running the business, basically. Mm. I typically be home before 6 p.m., time I get out of the city and traffic, and then the kids typically would go to bed at 7 o'clock. I would read them a bedtime story. Either before that, depending on how quickly I was able to get home, I would do a workout. I have a gym in the house. Or I would go for typically a 3-mile run. This particular night of the heart attack, I was running a bit late. Put the kids to bed, then decided the evenings are a little bit longer now. I decided I would do a 3-mile run that I do usually about 3 days a week. Everything was normal, perfect. Went for the run. Don't remember doing the run. I do remember coming back to the house, coming into the house from the run. That's the only portion of the run that I remember. I remember sitting down because I would typically sit down, catch up on the RTE news and stuff. We have an Irish box here. They were able to catch up on the TV back home. So I would typically sit down. Aaron had made me a sandwich. I ate the sandwich, watching the news, and I got severe chest pains. I then ran upstairs to Aaron to say, listen, I've got these chest pains that I've never experienced before and I think I'm taking a heart attack. So she called 911. We went back down the stairs. The last thing I remember is two police officers walking into the house and me saying, can you help me? And then the next thing I remember is waking up 3 days later.
And how much time elapsed between the phone call and them arriving at the house?
So it was 15 minutes in total. I was able to stay awake or stay conscious. But from when I collapsed to the EMS being on site was a minute. They were just pulling into the drive when I collapsed.
Right, okay.
And so it was very lucky.
Mickey, what was going through your head then? And how did you know it was a heart attack?
Well, I didn't know it was a heart attack. I just figured that I got jaw pain. and I got chest pain. That it, something wasn't right. Okay. I just knew it was an experience that I'd never felt before, you know.
Okay. And what was going through your head?
Survival. I was thumping my chest, hoping that it would go away, like almost like something was stuck in your throat. And I was banging, and but it gradually just kept getting weaker.
Right. And like your lifestyle, busy man, but you're 41, you're a young man, you played GAA to county level and All Ireland winning level. You're running three times a week, you're working out in the gym. So you shouldn't be getting a heart attack at 41, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
It was the last thing I expected. Yeah, listen, I would train at least 4 or 5 days a week. I keep myself in good shape. I assumed or thought was eating a pretty modest diet. But the heart surgeon said to me, he said, like, your lifestyle didn't really have much part to play in it. He says, in actual fact, the fact that you're fit possibly saved your life.
Yeah. And I've talked to people before in the past where sometimes being that fit masks, you know, so when it happens very quickly and out of the blue. So yeah. Had you any hint in the lead up to it, Mickey, that something was coming down the tracks?
I had absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
Didn't feel lethargic, didn't feel tired, didn't feel, I probably had a little bit of indigestion or heartburn, but that was something that would come and go every now and again. But right. Nothing of any severity that would lead me to think I need to get checked. In actual fact, Ray, I had a physical 3 weeks prior to this heart attack. I was at my GP, had my bloods taken, everything, had an EKG, everything was clear. So like, you know, I would get a physical every year, and I had it 3 weeks prior to the heart attack, and everything was clear.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a story later on after we get your story about a man I've spoken to on the radio a few times called Bobbitt. Anyway, so the lads arrived a minute after you collapsed, and you woke up 3 days later.
Yes.
So anything that happened then, Aaron has told you about it. Doctors, yeah. Nurses have told you about it. So what have you pieced together?
So I flatlined in the house, and they were able to get some level back, and then twice in the ambulance to the hospital. Jeez. They then worked on me. When I was getting discharged, the nurse came up to the room, and she cried in the room. She says, I can't believe this is you. She says, when we received you, I was one of the nurses on call, and she says, I worked on you for 6 minutes to get you back. We seen you at a wedding ring, 41-year-old. We assumed this guy's got family, so...
So, worth the effort. I suppose everyone's worth the effort.
Let's keep going,
yeah.
So I was told that, and then...
Just flatlining, so that means the heart has stopped.
Yeah, it stopped, yeah. 3 times.
My word.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, when they were able to get my heart going again, they then took me to the cath lab, to do the surgery. There was a blockage in the left artery. There was a bit of plaque that had ruptured, came off, and had caused a clot in the artery, which basically caused a heart attack, which they call a widowmaker.
Yeah.
So they worked on that. Then they came down to Aaron, and they said to Aaron that they were happy with that portion of the operation, but now it was just down to seeing how the brain was. So then they put me in a hydro blanket, I think it's called, where they lower your temperature. So I was in that for a day. And then at some point I started to, I was on the ventilator also. And then at some point I started to respond, squeezing hands and certain things. So.
And my understanding of that reducing your temperature is to slow down the metabolism.
I assume so. I'm not too sure.
And then they have better results then with the brain afterwards, mm-hmm. if they can do that. So the one of the arteries that feeds the muscle in the heart was completely blocked. That's the widowmaker. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a rupture. There's plaque from what I have gathered. There's plaque that forms in the arteries, and a piece of that plaque had broken off.
Mm.
And it closed over the artery. So,
and then they discovered one of the other arteries had 70%
blockage. They discovered that one of the other arteries then was 70% blocked, which was astonishing. So they worked on that then 2 days later. So they put in three stents altogether.
Right.
So they reckon I have more blood flow now than ever I had.
and do you feel different as a result? Because you were operating.
I feel like I was hit by a bus.
Yeah, but in a few months' time, you'll feel the benefits of the stents. So obviously not for lack of exercise. You were happy enough that, and they were happy enough that your diet was fine. So it was a genetic thing then.
Yeah, well, my grandfather passed away. He actually dropped with a heart attack and died at the International Rules Game 1984, Ireland and Australia, in the athletic grounds in Armagh. And he was 67. My grandmother dropped dead of a massive heart attack also. But that's really the only connection. My mom and father are both fine. Brothers and sisters are all good.
All good. Would they get tested now as a result of this, do you think?
I think half the country's getting tested now.
it's great that you're laughing, Mickey. It's great. Before I get to that man, Bobbitt, I just want to ask you about, because there's a physical side of this, but there's also a mental side of it, because you're gone from sort of, you know, master of the universe, not you, but you're a confident 41-year-old. How many people do you employ?
We employ about 80, approximately 80 plus.
And business is going well?
Business is going great, yeah, thank God. I was having the perfect life. Everything was good. Couldn't complain. Very, very happy. And then just all of a sudden, the legs were swept from under me, you know.
And like, it's only 3 weeks, but so you're still dealing with it. But how are you feeling mentally?
Yeah, well, I know that I'll. I just had an appointment just an hour ago with the cardiologist, and you know, things are improving. Physically, I know I'll bounce back. I went for a walk yesterday, almost done a mile yesterday, but I know physically won't be an issue. But on the mental side of it, it's something that's very hard to explain. You know, about 80% of the day I'm good, and then there's the 20% where you would feel yourself tearing up what could have been, two young kids, 6'2", wife, house, all the rest. You know, you start to think, and you can't help it. It's just something, you keep getting drawn back to it. What if this had happened? What if it happens again? You know, you get little palpitations, the heart's damaged, it's starting to mend. So all these things are going through your head. It knocks the confidence out of you.
Yeah.
I guess you're rebuilding. Terms of having to drive again, you know, being alone in the house with the kids, being alone in the house by yourself. There's just, you know, there's that other side to it that's going to take a bit of time.
It's early days though.
Yeah, it's early days, yeah.
Yeah. So this man, Bobbitt, I'll just tell you a quick story about him. He funded a documentary fronted by George Lee for RTE, and then he funded a documentary called The Widowmaker. I think it's available on Netflix, which is voiced by Gillian Anderson of The X-Files. Anyway, he was early 50s, healthy man, run, gym, all that sort of thing. Busy lifestyle, but healthy, not carrying any weight. And then he went for a test in America because he had to go for an annual medical. And your man said to him, your plaque is through the roof. You have the arteries of a 90-year-old man. And he'd never heard about plaque or calcification or anything like that. And then he did research on it, and that's why he funded the two documentaries. He reckons that every man over 40 and every woman over 50 should get this calcification test. For example, Mickey, if you had had that calcification test, you know, in February or at the beginning of March, they would have spotted that you had...
Absolutely.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the EKG and that doesn't get it.
No.
Like, this dye test, the echo or whatever it is the only thing that will actually spot that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would urge anyone over 40, especially males, fitter, you know, it really doesn't seem, it doesn't discriminate against athletes or anything like that. So just, you know, I would urge people to definitely go and get that test.
See, it costs money. That's the problem. It's not.
That's the problem.
It's not free of charge. I think it costs between 200 and 300 quid to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it done and I found that I was ahead of the curve. So as a result, I'm on statins and aspirin and, you know, preventative medicine.
Good.
Yeah. So you'll be on all that now for life. You'll be on.
Yeah, I'm on it. I'm taking like 5-6 tablets a day there. It's all new. I never was on any medication ever. So You know, it's a new chapter, shall I say.
Yeah. Now, you got a huge outpouring of support from this side of the Atlantic.
Unbelievable. Absolutely. Like, the amount of mass cards, flowers that came to the house was just astonishing. The amount of support from the GAA, from all my music friends, just absolutely overwhelmed at the amount of support. It's just absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah. You met your wife, Erin, through music, did you?
I did. I met my wife. I was in America about a year. I was asked to go and play on an Irish traditional music cruise out of Miami by Joni Madden from Cherish the Ladies. And I was getting on the ship and didn't know anyone really, apart from the normal Murray Black, Sharon Shannon. And my wife walked past me with a fiddle on her back with a sticker of Kerry and a Tyrone sticker. And I said, that's a rare combination. So we got chatting. And then that night we done a gig together on the ship. And then the rest is history.
you made sweet music, as they say. So what was the Kerry and the Tyrone? What was the Kerry and the Tyrone thing?
Well, her mother's family's all Kerry. Her father's from Pomeroy in Tyrone.
Right.
So it ended up her father was only 20 minutes up the road from where I was from. So
so that was an immediate connection. And then the music.
Yeah, there was a lot of similarities then, you know. It turned out we knew a lot of the same people then.
Right, okay. And how was Erin? Because, you know, a big shock for her.
Oh, Erin has been absolutely fantastic. You know, she's, I don't know where she pulled the strength out of, but she's absolutely unbelievable. Obviously, when it happened, there was a lot going through her head with my family back in Ireland and, you know, getting the information across. And just, she's been absolutely fantastic. Mm. Brilliant.
And what have the doctor said to you about stress? Because, you know, up at 5:30 into the city, you know, responsible for 80 to 100 people, that's stressful enough.
They mentioned it, but I never felt really that
did
much
you not? No.
Stressed, really, to be honest. I guess my outlet was always to train, you know, but I never really, there never really was a time that I felt overwhelmed or stressed by the work. I was always up for the challenge.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved getting out in the morning. I loved going to the job sites. I loved, you know, just, and I've really good people that work for me, you know, that really take care of a lot of things as well. So I don't believe that I was overly stressed unless subconsciously I was, but I didn't feel that I was, you know.
Yeah. I suppose you just dealt a bad hand, really, when it came to when they were handing out the jeans.
I doubt so.
Yeah, but because you were, you know, when did you retire from inter-county football?
Inter-county football, I retired just after 2005.
Okay.
But I played with my club right up to 2012, but just before I came to America.
Right. And you were feeling so fit recently that you were thinking of going back playing for a local club in New York.
Absolutely. Like, I live up in Rockland, and we've a great GA facility here, and I was going to go back and maybe chance 20 minutes on the edge of the square or something like that. But I done a lot of CrossFit recently. I'd been doing a lot of CrossFit with high intensity workouts. So it was like the fitness levels were as good as they had been in the last 5 years.
I'm interested to know, because I read somewhere that you checked your watch when you came in. Have you got a Fitbit or a Garmin or something?
So
like that?
I have an Apple Watch.
Right. And does that give your heart rate? Does that give your heart rate?
It does. Everything was fine. I actually done the run 15 seconds quicker than I had the two nights previous.
Right, okay.
So it's all very mind-boggling, you know.
Yeah. No, because I read an article recently where people are presenting to cardiologists because of things they're reading on their Fitbits and their, you know, their Garmin watches. They're thinking that they've a heart problem. Now, Mary has been on. Mickey, she says, my father died of heart disease at 43 when I was 12. Our family then descended into chaos. I'm so glad you're still here to raise your children, says Mary. And I can relate to this story. I'm 52, healthy, had a stroke out of the blue 1 year ago. Physically, I'm okay. It's mental is where the problem is. Very hard to relax. You sound like you're a laid back type of person, Mickey. You don't let things get on top of you.
I like a bit of crack. I don't take things too seriously. Yeah. Well, up until now, anyway. But, you know, yeah, I never really, yeah, just take it as it comes, you know.
Somebody else says, I had similar as Mickey with my heart, 99% and 87% blockages in my heart, had heart attack and on 12 tablets a day. Now 8 years on and flying it. All back to normal. Takes effort, but you can recover. And Annie says, this man is one lucky man. My partner had a cardiac arrest, which is different to a heart attack, while out running and died as a result. No symptoms. He had 3 blocked arteries like this man, but was fit and healthy, or so we thought. This test should be free for all. Surely prevention is cheaper than a hospital stay. Well, that's if you watch that documentary, that's what they say, that prevention is cheaper. And as a result, a lot of people don't buy into it, because once you're on preventative medication, that's it. Cause see a doctor, don't need to see you again, sort of thing. Anyway, that's another day's discussion. Well, listen, great to hear you. And I've a bit of the old banjo playing here. Will I give?
I think it's that.
It's an instrument I love, the banjo.
It's a great instrument. It's a pity I couldn't play it a bit better.
Like Finbar Fury, the things he can do with a banjo.
Finbar's a whole different level, Finbar.
Yeah, but that's your, you know. And that's an outlet as well, is it, at the weekends, is it? Do you still play?
During the whole COVID, I was doing a few Facebook Lives just for the crack, you know. Yeah, but we play a lot. There's always music in the house. We're always surrounded by a lot of music. So, yeah, that's a big part of everything we do.
So Micheál and Reardon will be learning an instrument, will they?
They are indeed. Micheál's already at the piano, yeah.
Right.
He loves his bit of Shanos dancing too.
Does he? Right. Self-taught, is it?
Yeah. Freestyle. Self-taught, yeah.
Listen, Mickey, great to hear you in such good spirits. Mind yourself.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure we'll talk again in the future. Thanks, Mickey.
Good luck.
See you.
Care.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Connor Pope is on the line. How are you doing, Connor?
Hi, Ray. How are you getting on?
We've some very important cake controversies to discuss in a moment. But first, to your problem this week, pricewatch@rte.ie if you want Connor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. So, dear Connor, there is a widespread problem with AIB banking app and or their online banking in the last few weeks. New update not compatible with most phones. They're telling customers to upgrade their phones rather than fix the issue. Even the links they post re-support can't be accessed. Please help.
Okay. Well, I looked into this. I got this message late last week. And first off, it's not a widespread issue. And secondly, it's not most phones. Now, that's not to diminish the experience of our listener, because they are having a problem and they're not the only person who's having a problem, because AIB updated their online, their banking app in recent times, and it will only work with operating system, the Apple operating system, iOS 11 or above that, or the Android system 8.0 or better. Now, when you look at those things on the surface, the iOS system is maybe 3 years old. The Android system's a little bit older. So I was thinking, does that exclude all phones that are more than 3 years old? And it doesn't. But what it does exclude is all phones from the iPhone 5 down.
Okay.
Now, the question then is, when was the iPhone 5 and similarly compatible Android phones? So you're looking at a phone that's about 7 years old.
Okay.
So, and then I went off and I said, okay, well, how many people have that kind of phone? And I'm all about the info,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So according to global stats, around 2% of the iPhone market and around the same percentage for the Android market is made up of these phones that are not compatible. So you'd be looking at maybe 30,000 people in Ireland who would still have the old phones.
Yes.
So they are the people who will struggle to get access. Now, I contacted AIB and they told me that they had to release this upgrade to their app to prepare for strong customer authentication regulations, which are coming down the tracks. So the systems have to be more rigorous to protect people from fraud and protect people from other vulnerabilities. So as a result, they've upgraded their app. The vast majority of customers have updated their app successfully, but there are a small number of users who are working on the older phones. So then I was thinking, okay, well, what can we do? I mean, because, you know, are you going to send somebody out to buy an 800 or 900 euro phone? That's probably a little bit excessive if you just want to access your banking online or over the phone. So then I went off and I priced second-hand iPhones of the type that you'd need to be able to access this iOS software. So an iPhone 7, which, by the way, is still the most commonly held phone in Ireland. You can buy one of them on, like, dozens and dozens of websites, from the classified websites that you might be familiar with, Dundeal and Adverts, to like kind of regular phone resellers. And they cost around 70 or 80 or 90 quid.
Okay.
So the only piece of advice that I could give somebody who has a problem with this is to go out and get themselves an upgraded phone. They don't have to buy the top of the range iPhone 12 or whatever it might be. They can buy themselves an iPhone 7, and that will give them access to the app. It's a bit of a pain, but you know what? You know, and I speak as somebody who's absolutely obsessed by my phone. I think having a slightly upgraded version of a phone is no bad thing. Cameras are better, the software is better, it's faster to use, and you know what, it'll probably make this person's life easier in the long run. So 70 or 80 quid, you get yourself a new phone, you'll be sorted.
Right, there you go. Now, good luck with that. You may have heard the story that Marks and Spencers have started legal action in the UK against Aldi and their Cuthbert the Caterpillar cake, which they say infringes on its trademark of Colin the Caterpillar cake. So M&S have Colin, Aldi have Cuthbert, and M&S are saying you're copying us. But Cuthbert is not the only caterpillar-style cake on the market, so to see what all the fuss is about, we sent Niamh out, our Niamh, to see if she could get some caterpillar cakes and bring them into studio. And Connor, you're going to give us the background to this story.
Yeah. Now, last week, Marks and Spencer started legal action.
Sorry. Good afternoon, Ray.
sorry.
Hello, Connor.
Hi, Niamh. How are you? Good to talk to you.
It's so unusual to have somebody in to be talking to. Anyway, go on. Go ahead.
I'm just jealous that you guys get to eat cake and I just get to talk about cake. Yeah, I mean, that's not fair. But anyway, last week, Marks and Spencer went to the High Court in the UK claiming that Aldi had infringed its copyright. Now, it's important to say that Aldi's Cuthbert the Caterpillar isn't for sale in Aldi stores in Ireland. Right. But so they lodged this intellectual property claim in the UK High Court. And the question then is why? Because M&S have had this Colin the Caterpillar cake for about 30 years, right? Now, the question that people were asking is why have they picked on Aldi? Because Tesco has a cake that's called Curly the Caterpillar. Asda in the UK has Clyde the Caterpillar. Waitrose has Cecil the Caterpillar. And then Sainsbury's weirdly goes with Wiggles the Caterpillar. Now, for start, I'm struggling to understand why a caterpillar cake is such a desirable thing.
Will I tell you why?
Confectionaries. Go on, why a caterpillar?
Because what it is a Swiss roll. So it's just...
I know what they look like.
I know, but people had a Swiss roll and they're going, at some stage along the line, they said, how can we make this child-friendly and sell it as a child's birthday cake? And somebody said, well, caterpillar. That's
Yeah, I suppose
well,
maybe.
Actually, can
maybe.
I interject there, please, Ray? Because I've done a lot of research on this today. So back in 1990, the cake supplier to Marks and Spencer's was Park, and they trialled various different kinds of cakes to see what was the most easily shareable, cuttable cake at a party.
Right.
So there were many elongated animals, Ray, that they did test out, and they were considering snakes, crocodiles or fish, but they did settle on Colin the Caterpillar cake.
Right, there you go. So there's the answer.
And in fairness, I'm not sure anybody would really like a snake cake. The Garden of Eden ruined that animal for everybody, let's be honest. But anyway, so the bottom line is, and so I went and priced them. Colin costs £7 in the UK and Cuthbert is a fiver.
Okay.
So the reason why Marks and Spencer is so annoyed is they're claiming that Cuthbert is climbing on the coattails of Colin and exploiting the good reputation that Colin has to the disadvantage of people who buy the Cuthbert cake, which they say is inferior.
Isn't there a history of Aldi and Lidl copying, for want of a better word, more high-end products?
Well, you know, if you want to use the word copying, Ray, I'm not going to go near that word.
Right.
No, I mean, obviously, if you go into Aldi and Lidl, they have all their own brand products, and they do look astonishingly like the branded products.
Yes.
You know, in fact, the guys from Foil Arms and Hog have a really good skit about it, and they like, so instead of Weetabix, you might have Wheatbisks.
Yes.
But like, they look identical, and to be honest, they probably are identical. And then there's everything Okie Dokies instead of Hunky Dories. You know, there's a whole lot of different ones. But of course, this was absolute gold for Aldi.
last week. They loved it because suddenly everybody was talking about the product. Everyone was taking the mickey out of M&S. And Aldi's Twitter account, they had a picture of Cuthbert behind bars. And then they had their tweet, Cuthbert has been found guilty of being delicious. And then the Aldi Ireland account had Marks and Snitches, more like. And, you know, it's you have to laugh. And it is a bit of crack. And, you know, ultimately, you guys are going to make the final decision on which is the best of the caterpillar cakes in Ireland. Well, and I'm just going to sit here sadly on the phone.
Yeah, well sit there sadly and salivate. Because, Niamh, you went out this morning and you did how many thousand steps?
In the search of journalism, Ray, 7,182 steps were taken in the quest to find the most caterpillar cakes that we could attain in the 3 hours that I had to get them. Right. So
within your county?
Within my county, yes. Of course, I was keeping within guidelines. It took one tram, two buses and a lot of walking.
Well done.
So I visited Tesco in Jervis Street where I picked up Curly the Caterpillar Cake. That was €9.50.
Okay.
Then I went into Marks and Spencer's where I had a lovely chat with the girls in there who were telling me about Colin's girlfriend and actually found out later wife, Connie. They got married 4 years ago, Ray. You could have bought a matching set of them wearing top hats and bridal wear for £100 in England at the time. So that was 11:30. So they're
Colin
saying
the
for Colin the Caterpillar, the original, and what they're arguably saying the best, Aldi on Parnell Street. Unfortunately, I could not source a caterpillar cake in Aldi on Parnell Street. The same could be said for Lidl on Moore Street. I then went back into the ILAC Centre. I went to Dunn Stores where I got the cake of Calvin the Caterpillar cake.
Calvin the Caterpillar.
Now,
did you know that that existed? Connor?
I had no clue.
I'm unfamiliar with Calvin. The
Your name is perfect for the caterpillar cake, Connor.
Well, I can tell you.
Do you know what? That's what they should have gone with, Connor the caterpillar cake, and I would have taken them to the High Court.
Well, I can tell you that Calvin the Caterpillar is wearing a very jaunty and festive blue party hat, where he, you know, obviously is saying that this is for birthday parties. This is what you want to buy. So then I made my way out to Super Value in Black Rock, where the caterpillar cake was not available in Super Value. Then I crossed the road to Aldi in Black Rock, where I tried and failed to source
Cuthbert.
Cuthbert.
Okay.
The cut price, Colin, the caterpillar cake.
Right. So what we have is we've Curly the caterpillar cake, we've Calvin from Dunn Stores,
yes,
and we have the original, Colin, the caterpillar cake.
Now, so I will say its rivals here are far more colourful than Colin the caterpillar cake. So the Curly the caterpillar cake from Tesco has a very multicoloured motif. So it has a lot of different kind of sprinkles and what look like Smarties, but I'm guessing aren't actual Smarties because then we're going to a different kind of copyright here.
Okay.
And then the Dunn's cake, the Calvin the caterpillar cake, has what looks like a dolly mixture. It has jellies sitting atop.
And some hundreds and thousands, is that what they call them? Sprinkles,
hundreds and thousands, whatever you want to call them yourself. So Calvin has a yellow face and Curly from Tesco has an orange face. But you see the white face is the white chocolate face of Colin the caterpillar face that is...
Are you still with us, Connor?
I'm getting a bit confused now, but I'm
okay.
Really concentrating.
But no, but this is the thing, because like I don't think there is a birthday party or an office party that hasn't seen a Colin the caterpillar cake. And the whole thing is that you slice up the cake. It's supposed to be for about 10 people. I've squeezed about 20 slices out of one at one time. And the white face, the white chocolate face, which they now sell individually, it's that popular, that goes to the birthday boy or girl.
Ah, I see. Yes.
But only if the birthday boy or girl likes white chocolate. And I am very familiar with the Colin the caterpillar cake. I've had them at many, many birthday parties over many years, but my children are sensible people and they don't like white chocolate, which means that we don't get that face.
Okay, well, you better do a taste test, Niamh Hassel.
Okay, well, I'm going to go into Colin first, so I've just taken the end off it.
Yeah, the original and the best. I'm wondering, at what stage can you sort of claim copyright on something, you know, like a Swiss roll covered in chocolate with a few Smarties on it is a Swiss roll covered in chocolate with a few Smarties on it, whether you call it a caterpillar, whether you call it Colin or Cuthbert or Calvin or whoever, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Connor.
Well, that's what the High Court is going to decide in the UK. And I'm not a legal expert by any means, but given that there are so many other caterpillar cakes out there, it seems unlikely
that M&S will win. But they have very expensive legal departments. Yeah. I'm sure they're not foolish.
So As Duality, I'm sure.
I'm sure both of them, you know, would be confident of success.
Okay, Niamh, what's the verdict?
I've tasted all three. Yes. So the Caterpillar cakes have chocolate exoskeletons, as you know, yes, which mirror that of its wild cousins. The... The Tesco cake is a lovely buttercream centre. It is delicious, but its chocolate isn't as superior as the Curly the Caterpillar cake, as Calvin the Caterpillar cake from Dunn's is actually a little bit moister, but winning out, I have to say, the extra €3 that it cost or €2 that it cost to get the Calvin the Caterpillar cake, yeah, it does win out in the superior stakes of Caterpillar cakes. It just has a nice richness, a nice moistness to it. It's very chocolatey, but I will say that the Dolly mixtures on top of the Dunn's cake, the Calvin cake, are actually a welcome addition.
Okay, so the original seems on this occasion to be the best. Conor Pope, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Ray.
Looking
thanks,
forward
Niamh.
To a Caterpillar cake in your name. Niamh Hassel, thank you very much.
You're very welcome,
for your
Ray.
Steps and your tasting and everything else. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Anish Toshin and Fifth Skelton and Oakdale and Maura Dewalish. Grandma, good morning. Thank you very much. 5555 on RAID.ie. Do the caterpillar cakes turn into butterfly cakes? Hey. And on Mickey Coleman, who we spoke to before, just on my way to get an echocardiogram, was going to cancel it, but now after listening to your guest, I'm so glad I didn't. Many thanks to him and his bravery, long life and happiness to him. And I had a cardiac arrest 6 years ago, age 44, out of the blue and no prior heart issues, on meds for life, but enjoying life now, says Brendan. I remember hearing a stat, and I think it was from Mr. Bobbitt, that 50% of people who have heart attacks, that's the first they know of it. And they die. That's the scary statistic there. So once you're over 40 as a man, over 50 as a woman, you need to go and get checked. Ray, Lido is an Italian word for beach. Forms part of the place names of several Italian seaside towns known for their beaches, such as Lido di Venezia, the barrier beach enclosing the Venetian lagoon. Says Connor and Scurries. Thanks for that, Connor. And Mark Moriarty's recipe for slow cooked lamb curry from his last series is our go to at the moment. Can go as hot as you like. Marcus Waring is the recipe that I'm using. I got a book from Mike Hanrahan from Stockton's Wing years ago. I don't know why he gave me a book, but it was Marcus Waring's book, and I found in that a sort of a family friendly curry, and that's the one we make at home. But we don't put the carrots in because people don't like the carrots. There you go. Now, it's time for our quiz of today. Thank you. Today being the 19th of April, 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. And a prize. Yes, today's prize comes from the Heritage in Laois. The Heritage is set in the heart of the countryside in the pretty village of Killinard, which is just an hour's drive from Dublin. Enjoy on-site activities like golf, tennis, country walks, or visit the leisure centre with the award-winning spa. So it's a two-night break for two people. You can find out more at theheritage.com. Eimear McGee, how are you?
Hi, Ray, how are you?
You're not too far from the Heritage yourself.
No, I'd even say even be in my county.
Yeah.
I can go.
You can go, yes, you can go. May not be open, but you can go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Stand outside, look up.
You're in Port Tarlington.
Yeah, I am.
How are things with you?
Yeah, pretty good, not too bad. I was, you know, coping okay. Looking forward to the end of lockdown.
Yeah. You're working from home. Is there anybody else working from home?
Yeah, my husband's working since last March as well, he's working from home.
Okay. And then you've three boys. What ages are they?
They're 11, 14 and 15. So they're all back in school.
You're delighted, I'd say.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Well, it's good for everybody, isn't it?
We do. We all need it. The headspace.
Yeah. And the broadband.
Not the homework.
The broadband needs it as well, I'd say. I'd say there was a big draw on the broadband.
Yeah. And our internet, we're in the middle of nowhere, so we had to upgrade. But it's fine, thank God.
Yes. You and a lot of the country, I'd say, had to upgrade over the last 13 exactly. months. Yeah. How are you on the quizzes?
Fingers crossed, okay. You know, I hear this every day and I kind of go, oh yeah, but we'll see.
Right.
It's always easy until you're on the phone.
Well, there you go. It is a lot easier when you're in the car and there's no pressure.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, like, whatever you do, don't think about the fact that there's, you know, nearly 250,000 people listen to you.
Oh, God.
Don't think
Why
about
you
that
say
at
that?
All. Now, don't think about that, because that'll make you nervous, Eimear.
Oh, great. Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, you're up against Andrew O'Rourke in Mullingar. How are you doing, Andrew?
Hello there, Ray. Good afternoon to you.
Good to talk to you.
And you too, Ray.
How are things in Mullingar?
Mullingar, Ray, is very well. It's surviving the pandemic and we're getting on with life as best we can. But like everybody else, Ray, we're looking forward to getting more freedom and yes. less restrictions and be able to go out and about and do what we want when yeah. we want.
And leave Westmeath. I'm leaving Westmeath.
What's that?
I'm leaving Westmeath. You want to get out of Westmeath eventually?
Well, not necessarily Westmeath, Ray, but even just more coffee shops. To be able to yes. go in and have a regular cup of coffee.
Yes, be nice.
You know, to be able yeah. to go and play golf.
The little things we took for granted.
That's
the yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. What's your story? You retired?
Ray, I am lucky enough. I retired for the last 5 years from my company. I worked for 34 years with a tobacco company.
Right.
And I know cigarettes now are not the most favourite product, but back then they were more acceptable and yes. there was less restrictions. And I must say I was with the business for the best part of those times. But I'm happy now to be retired, Ray, and I'm just doing a lot of, or some amount of voluntary work.
And I see here, and I suppose the connection wouldn't be lost on you, Andrew, I'm sure, that you worked for a cigarette company and now you're doing some voluntary work for the Irish Cancer Society.
That is correct, Ray.
Right. So you've made that connection in your head.
Oh, Ray, many times. But I can tell you, I don't announce it to my clients when I drive them to the hospital. If I'm asked, I'll give an honest answer, but I don't sort of broadcast it out loud because it doesn't fit
yeah.
exactly proper into the role.
No, but you're giving something back, which
yeah,
is great.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Who's at home?
At home, I have my daughter, Emma, who works with a bank, and she's worked from home for the last 3 or 4 months here. My son, James, is working and studying in Dublin, and my wife, Anne, is out and about in Mullingar, as she normally does on a normal, regular afternoon.
Right. And you're obviously a bit of a quizzer, because you had a little bit of a problem with our qualifying question. Which county is Drogheda in?
Yes, Ray.
Go on.
Well, I was of the opinion, I'm originally from South County Monaghan, so I would know Drogheda reasonably well. And I would have thought that Drogheda is partially in County Louth, this northern part, and across the River Boyne, the southern part, you're coming to County Meath.
I see.
So there's possibly two answers to that one
yeah,
question.
Yeah, yeah, a bit like Athlone, isn't it?
Athlone is right. You've Roscommon yeah. on the western side, and you've Westmeath eastern side, correct and right.
There you go. Right, okay, so you're up against that, Emer McGee.
Yeah. Good luck.
He knows his stuff, yeah.
Good luck to you, Andrew.
Good luck to you.
Okay, 5 questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If it's a draw, we go to a tie-break situation. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Rightio, Emer, first question for you. On this day in 1993, the 97th Boston Marathon was won by Cosmas Nedetti of Kenya. On what continent would you find Kenya?
Africa.
Correct answer. Similar question for you, Andrew. On this day in 1971, the 75th Boston Marathon was won by Alvaro Meja of Colombia. On what continent would you find Colombia?
South America.
Correct answer. Now, Emer, second question for you is an audio one. Have a listen to this. On this day in 1946, Tim Curry, English actor, was born in Cheshire in England. He was famous for playing Dr. Frankenfurter in that musical. Can you name the musical?
Oh, God. I can see it. It's got the plant that eats people. God, I can't think. Yeah. No, I'm going to... Oh, let me see.
Any idea?
No, I'm actually gone blank. It's terrible. Well, I can't know.
No, the Rocky Horror Show we were looking for. The Rocky Horror Show. Okay. Rightio. Early days.
Okay.
Andrew, yeah, your audio question is this. Have a listen.
What happens to John Brown is his business, but the Queen's security will never be compromised.
What action?
You'll talk when I'm finished.
On this day in 1998, at the 51st BAFTAs, that Scottish comedian, was nominated for a Best Actor Award for his role in Mrs. Brown. Can you name him?
Scottish actor, Ray.
Scottish comedian, I said.
Scottish comedian. I would go with Billy Connolly.
Correct answer. Yes, in a serious role.
Yes.
Okay, two plays one. Emer, your third question. On this day in 1836, Nikolai Gogol's play, Reviser, premiered in St. Petersburg. In which country would you find St. Petersburg? Russia or Germany?
Russia.
Correct answer. Andrew, on this day in 1980, at the 25th Eurovision Song Contest, Johnny Logan won for Ireland singing What's Another Year, written by the late Shea Healy, in The Hague. The Hague or The Hague? In which country would you find The Hague? Belgium or the Netherlands?
The Netherlands, right?
Correct answer. 3-2. Emer, fourth question is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, burns, burns.
On this day in 1963, that singer released his single Ring of Fire, written by his future wife, June Carter. Can you name him?
Johnny Cash.
Is the correct answer. Can I take this opportunity now to apologise to my friend Bernard Duff and his wife Trish for singing that song at their wedding? It's a long, that could be 30 years ago that happened, so I'm just saying I'm sorry. I'm very
it's
sorry.
It's a hard song not to sing.
Well, have you ever heard me singing? Anyway, right, Andrew, an audio one for you as well. Have a listen to this. Now, on this day in 2020, as in last year, the Together at Home concert for COVID-19 aid streamed worldwide. It was curated by that singer you heard. Can you name her?
Wow. Shot in the dark, Ray, would it be Lady Gaga?
Well, it's a good shot in the dark because it's hit the target. Lady Gaga is the correct answer. Right.
Lucky.
Okay, so 4-3. Emer, you have to get this one right to stay in with a chance.
Okay.
And hope that Andrew gets his final question incorrect. That'll bring us to a tie break. Good luck with this.
Thanks.
Now, on this day in 1984, Advance Australia Fair was proclaimed as Australia's national anthem. Which of these countries has a larger population than Australia? Canada, Romania or Belgium? Which has a larger population than Australia? Canada, Romania?
Canada.
You say Canada. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Australia has a population of 25 million, Romania 19, Belgium 11, Canada indeed has a greater population, 37 million.
Oh, woo.
Right. In with a chance. In with a chance.
Fingers crossed.
Four. Andrew's on four, but he has one in hand. Good luck at this, Andrew. If you get it right, you win. Get it wrong, and it brings us to a tie-break situation. Here we go. On this day in 1996, South Africa defeated Pakistan to win cricket's Pepsi Cup. Which of these countries has a larger population than South Africa? Saudi Arabia, South Korea, or Thailand? So which of those countries has a larger population than South Africa? Saudi Arabia, South Korea, or Thailand? For the prize.
I'll go Saudi Arabia, Ray.
Right, okay. South Africa has a population of 59 million. South Korea, 51. Saudi Arabia is 34. We were looking for Thailand with 69 million.
Okay.
So that brings us to a tiebreaker, the stress is right. I don't particularly like them. It's like a penalty shootout, but
yeah,
it's the only way we have to sort it out. So we asked you a question before we went on air. Whoever guessed closest to the correct answer is the winner. Okay, so here's the question. On this day in 1875, Charles Stewart Parnell was elected as MP for County Meath. According to the AA route planner, how long would it take you to drive from Navan in County Meath to Carrisaveen in County Kerry? And we wanted the answer in hours and minutes. Can you remember your guess, Emer?
Yeah, I said 4.5 hours.
You said 4 hours and 30 minutes. Okay, it's a distance of 394 kilometres. Andrew, can you remember your guess?
I do indeed, Ray. I was 3 hours and 45 minutes.
Okay, 3 hours and 45 minutes. The correct answer is 4 hours and 27 minutes.
Well done, Emer.
You came back. You came back. I thought you were dead in the water there, Emer, but you came back. Andrew, sorry about that. You did so well.
There you are, Ray. You can't win them all.
Can't win them all. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug, Andrew.
Perfect. You're very good.
Okay. And great talking to you. Mind yourself.
Thanks, Ray.
Okay. See you now.
Take care.
That's Andrew in Mullingar. Emer McGee, you're traveling all the way from Port Arlington to Killinard.
But it's important to point out I'm from the Offaly side of Port Arlington, so it's a tiny bit further.
Oh, it's a tiny bit further. Okay, right. Well, enjoy it anyway when you get to go.
Well thanks,
done.
Brilliant, Ray.
Great talking to you.
You too.
Okay,
God bless,
see you
Ray.
Now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Mary Coughlan and Two Breaking Into One from her current album. Love that. 5 and 5, 5-1. Now, most of us miss a big old hug. Hugging friends and family who don't live with us has been off the cards for over a year now. And it's one of the simple, easy pleasures that we may have taken for granted before lockdown. But what's happening in the brain and the body when we hug? And why do we like it? Why do we need it? Why do we miss it so much? Well, to tell us more, I'm joined now by Dr. Susanna Walker, a reader in behavioural neuroscience at Liverpool John Moores University. How are you, Susanna?
Hi there.
Good to talk to you. So what's going on when we hug somebody?
Well, the main thing to say is that we're wired for touch, and we're wired up. We've got special nerves for these social interactions that you're talking about, so hugs and caresses. So we've got a whole array of different nerve fibres in the skin, ones that tell us when we've hurt ourselves, they signal pain, mm-hmm. ones that tell us when we've got an itch, and ones that signal touch. And there are a specific subset of these touch-sensitive ones that are tuned to exactly the kind of touches that we experience when we're having social interactions, so a gentle moving caress. And so we think that these are the neurobiological basis of that rewarding aspect of social touch. And they're there because our very survival depends on these tactile interactions.
Because we're social animals.
Absolutely. Just like all mammals, we're social animals. And when we have a prolonged period of development, so infants are born helpless. So they have an innate drive to have to seek closeness, proximity to a caregiver.
Yeah.
And that's not just for food, for warmth. The social interaction, the touch, is essential for growth and development. And so that's what we think that these nerves have evolved to signal.
So when they signal that, something happens in our brain then, with hormones and the like?
Absolutely, yes. So if we're touching something with the palms of our hand, if we're picking up a drink or something, those signals go to a region of the brain that's specialised for touch signals.
Mm.
Whereas these touch nerves that I'm talking about, they project to areas of the brain that are specialised for signals from the body about emotions, so they're emotion centres. And the touch on the skin triggers a cascade of release of different chemicals, including one, oxytocin, which is really important for social behaviours. And oxytocin has lots of effects. It inhibits pain, it reduces stress. And we know that these tactile interactions, so this touching each other, it reduces our stress levels, reduces heart rates, reduces blood pressure. So that's the effects of the oxytocin being released.
Lovely stuff. The lovely stuff. I'm just reading here in an article there that so you and your colleagues have discovered that touching the back, low intensity skin stimulation of the back, which will be part of a hug, sends some of these signals to the brain.
Yes. So we're interested in where in the body these specialists sort of touch, social touch nerves are.
Yes.
And they don't seem to be in the palms of the hands, the soles of the feet. They're in what we call the hairy skin of the body. So although we as humans are not hairy, but it's a different kind of skin.
Speak for yourself.
We don't know exactly in humans, but certainly in animal models, they seem to be densest in the core areas. So on the back, for example, which would make sense if they have this social function.
Right. It's obviously it's contextual, because if somebody tries to give you a hug and you don't want it, the brain is going to go, red flag, go away.
100%, yes. So absolutely. So in terms of development and care, then, we have this innate signal that it's rewarding, that it's pleasurable. But of course, the context matters. So who is doing the touching? And so it won't have any of these beneficial effects if someone is touching you and that touch is unwanted. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When we could have guests in studio here, over the years, we've heard some heartbreaking stories from people that I would have only met, 20 minutes or half an hour previously. But the sort of natural reaction as a human being is to give that person a hug to comfort them at the end of the interview. It just seems right.
Absolutely, yes. And, and that's what we do. And I think as humans, we do, obviously, we're very visual. We use speech a lot to communicate. So we do. But when things are emotional, when we're distressed, then we rely much more on these non-verbal signals like touch and a hug. And it's there because of these beneficial effects that we might not consciously know about, but we've learned through experience, then, as you say, that's our you know, sort of instinctive response to yes. comfort someone with touch.
I see a recent survey found that hugs was fourth on a list of 30 things that people are most looking forward to after lockdown. And that was just behind visiting friends and relatives, who they probably would hug anyway, and eating out in a restaurant. So how can we make up for not getting the hugs from, you know, from people, relations, friends? Is there any way we can make up for it? Any substitutes?
Well, one of the interesting things that is that pet ownership has gone up hugely during lockdown. So that could be for a number of reasons, but we know that a lot of the benefits that we get from hugging another human being, we get from petting a dog or stroking a cat. So that might be part of it as well. So that's one potential. There's been an increase in the sale of what's called weighted blankets. So just woolen blankets, but with some weight in, so that's sort of like a blanket giving you a hug. And a lot of people have found those that they're a good way to sleep. They quite like them, so that's another alternative.
Yeah, and of course, you and your colleagues would study the evolutionary value of a hug. What would that be? Because go on.
Sorry, no, it's about social bonding. We people that have strong social connections, strong social networks, that perceive themselves to be supported, they have better physical and mental health. As you said right at the start, we're social animals. Mm. And so it makes sense that we would be wired to find the being close to someone and these tactile interactions rewarding, because it has an overall benefit on our health.
Have you ever heard about the hugging saint? She was very popular in Ireland there for a while. She used to visit on a regular basis, and then thousands of people would queue up to be hugged by her. That's
wow.
Yeah. I think she's from India. She's from India. I interviewed her, I think, years and years ago. She was an elderly lady, and she just sat there and people came up and hugged her. And people got a lot from it. And she tours the world just hugging. What a job.
Wow.
Huh? What a job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that is.
we'll have to get back onto her if she's still alive.
Absolutely. And, post-lockdown, definitely.
Post-lockdown, yes. Yeah, yeah. Dr. Susanna Walker, a reader in behavioural neuroscience at Liverpool John Moores University. Thanks for talking to us about hugging today. Virtual hug
Thank
to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, see
Thank
you, Susanna.
You
Thank
on.
You. Bye, 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 bye. Bye. That's down there. Somebody's been on. Great to hear Mickey Coleman sharing his story about his heart condition. Same happened to my husband regarding no symptoms. Just to clarify for your listeners, an echo does not necessarily show what you need to know pending a heart attack. It is the cardiac CT you need to check, calcification and blocked arteries. That's Nora. Well, we may get Mr. Bobbitt back on. He knows all of the details on that. We may speak to him again in the near future. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening. There you go.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.